You're in the home 6010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. And whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome into our post-draft Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Certainly a lot of news to get to, not just draft-related, but a certain quarterback in Green Bay is perhaps unhappy. But before we get to the football, a quick hello. Matthew Berry, what is happening?
Not much. Finally, we have something to talk about. Not that we yes. Like, I mean, listen,
a lot of mailbags recently.
Yeah, we can always baloney our way through stuff, but I'm just, you know, now that players have found their teams, and then of course, Adam Schefter breaking the huge news over the weekend about Aaron Rodgers, you know, or just the day of the draft. Yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm excited. So things to talk about. Very excited. Yeah,
no doubt about that. And Stefania, how are you this morning?
I'm good. You know, I'm very happy with how my 49ers drafted by and large. I actually thought this year the draft was one of those where after the first round, everybody felt pretty good. You know, there's usually a lot of drama on the first day where there's some really upset fan bases and things. And I felt like this was a little different this year. So that was fun. And I'm glad to be on the other side of the draft. But there's some breaking news that might not be on your rundown sheet that I think we need to address.
That's right, Stefania. You know, you think about this podcast and how it's evolved over the years, right? And you've tolerated Matthew for, what, 13 years now? And that in and of itself is an accomplishment, but it is not done without support from the most amazing staff possible. Daniel, as you guys all know, is part of the fabric of the show, not just on the screen, but also behind the scenes as well. Kyle, Damian, Tom, Keith, you name it. That also includes our producer, Matt Harrington, who we brought aboard, was it a year ago? Time is all relative right now. I believe it was before last season when we took on a new level of sort of visual presence. And right. Matt Harrington, most
who
modest person.
Who produces, by the way, our Fantasy Football Now show on Sunday.
That's right.
He's done that for years.
Yes. He has an extremely notable birthday tomorrow,
right.
May 4th.
And we will say
happy early birthday. I'm not going to say the number. It's about 20 years younger than Matthew, for those that want to estimate a guess. So Matt Harrington, who I'm sure would never, ever, 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 ever want us to be talking about his birthday on the show because he lives on the opposite side of the limelight. An incredible friend, a great co-manager of Irish Twins in the War Room Football League, and an awesome person who we're very, very fortunate to have here as a part of the Fantasy Focus family. Matt,
right.
Happy
and
birthday,
his
our friend.
Dedication is set that he was willing to produce this silly podcast on his birthday, but yet here we are on a Monday, a little bit out of the usual to have it Monday instead of Tuesday. So I hope that means that Matt Harrington is getting a well-deserved break on his birthday. Cheers to you, my friend.
Yes, Matt Harrington, we are happy you were born. Absolutely. If you've enjoyed any minutes of Fantasy Football Now over the past, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years, I don't know how long it is, but it is all Matt Harrington. He does that every single Sunday. And of course, he has joined the Fantasy Focus family. If you end up watching, if you enjoy watching the videos of the show, whether it's in the app or on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, what have you, that is all the work of Mr. Harrington and his staff. He does a great job. He's a pain in the ass to play against in fantasy because he's a really, really good fantasy manager. The Irish Twins got a lot better when he joined the squad. That's all I'm going to say.
A shot at Ed Werder or more a shot at me? You can be honest.
A little bit of both, honestly. A little bit of both. I don't know that Ed helped you out that all that much.
Duly noted. All right. Ed was great and Matt is great as well. But happy early birthday, partner. We can't wait to hear how you celebrate tomorrow. And like Stefania said, hopefully by not working, although I have a sense you're going to find your way into the office because you always bring your best effort. We're going to get to the draft in just a moment, but the draft really took on new life on Thursday around, I think it was 3:15 p.m., when Adam Schefter went on NFL Live and broke a huge story that Aaron Rodgers, that's right, the reigning NFL MVP, wants out of Green Bay. Not like, you know, wanted the team to maybe address a couple of needs during the draft that would make him happy. Not that he wants a new contract. No, he wants out of Green Bay, Matthew. The drama we've known there was some behind the scenes drama in Green Bay for a while, but all of a sudden this story was kicked into overdrive, and this could be the story that defines the NFL offseason.
There's no question about that field. I certainly think quarterback movement overall, because there's some other big name quarterbacks that could potentially be changing teams as well. But I don't know that there's a name bigger. There's a few that are as big, but I don't know that there's a name bigger than Aaron Rodgers in NFL circles. And a couple of things here. So first off, understand that Aaron Rodgers is a very, very intelligent man. And there is a reason. I don't want to take too much behind the scenes here, but Field, as a newsbreaker, you can talk about this just in general. You know, I'm sort of out of my depth here because I'm not a newsbreaker the way Field that you are, that Adam or Mort or Jeff Darlington or Kimberly Martin or Diana or any of our, one of our great insiders are, right? But sometimes reporters will get stories and they'll be told, hey, can you hold this? Hey, can you figure, you know, and so I don't think the timing of Adam, whatever Adam's source was, I don't think the timing is accidental. So that's my own, I have no inside information on that. That is just my own guess, because to come out on the day of the draft, when everyone's talking about the NFL, I think that's Aaron or somebody in Aaron's camp or something like that, sending a message.
So
I actually thought that part of the interesting fallout from that, of course, as an unapologetic Niners fan, was this little nugget that the Niners had actually made an inquiry to the Packers about Aaron Rodgers. And when I first heard that, I laughed, like, that's ridiculous. Like, that's got to be fake. That's ridiculous. And come to find out, that actually did happen. John Lynch talked about it, but he said basically they were shut down the minute they asked the question. But that news coming out on Thursday had Niners fans talking about what are they going to do at quarterback and are they going to try and trade for Aaron Rodgers during the draft? I mean, it created an extra layer to what was going on there as well as everywhere else.
Yeah, so here's how I would respond to the sort of timing part of it, Matthew, is that I know that was one of the inferences that people took away from this was, you know, ideal timing to rock the boat, right? The NFL's biggest offseason event is right upon us. You kind of hijack the headlines for a couple of hours before the draft actually begun. What I would say is that this is not something that Shefty has just been holding in the holster, if I had to guess.
Oh, no, right? No. I wasn't accusing him of that. Please.
No,
please,
I know. I'm just saying, yeah. Just for people that maybe are like, you know, way to go, dude. Like, he's just trying to stir it up. No. At the same time, I don't think that Aaron just like woke up on draft morning and what became unhappy, right? I think it's clear that this is a mounting level of frustration from the star quarterback. And there probably are some elements of coincidence involved with the timing of it. But more important than the timing is the takeaway, right? Which is just that, like, someone's going to have to give an inch at some point here. I don't know how Aaron becomes happier with the team. And this is unbelievable reporting from Shefty, and he's the GOAT. We all know that. But one of the most amazing parts of the story was that Shefty laid out very specific details about flights being made from head coach Matt LaFleur and GM Brian Gutekunst and President Mark Murphy and other beats of this story. Normally a team, when they address a story, will either A, deny it, or B, downplay it. Mark Murphy, the Packers president, who writes a blog once a month for the team website, basically went through line by line and was like, yes, that happened. Yes, that happened. Yes, that happened. So next time you want to hear about someone trying to, like, when in doubt, trust Shefty is the takeaway, which we've long known. But this makes me, the reason why that's important here is that, like, I don't think Shefty's reporting made me feel as though, hey, all right, let's just say they redo his contract, all is hunky-dory, or they trade for someone or sign someone. No, this made me feel like, on principle, Aaron Rodgers wants to get the heck out of Green Bay and may not play there again, ever.
And sorry, go ahead, Stefania.
No, I was just going to say, it made me feel like he's done. Like, I did not see a door being open, no matter what they're saying. I did not see a door being open. I felt like it's either more they trade him or he's just going to hold out. And I think for fantasy purposes, to me, it starts shifting my mindset to, what do the Packers look like without Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, they look a lot worse is the quick answer there. They look a lot worse. And what's interesting here, yeah, I mean, hashtag analysis. Thank you very much. You're welcome. What I would say, though, is to your point, Stefania and Field, is that, yeah, this isn't just a there was other reporting out there, not on ESPN. There was other reporting out there that suggested this was just kind of a maneuver to try to get an extension, more of a, you know, a different contract and extension. And, yeah, you know, no. both Shefty and our friend Jay Glazer, you know, quickly knocked that down and said, no. This is much more than just, you know, not happy with a contract. This is, you know, listen, you know, sometimes, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's brothers or family or a marriage or whatever you want to, you know, a long-term relationship, things build up. And what I would say about Aaron Rodgers, to the extent, I don't know him, I've only met him once. But from all accounts, Aaron Rodgers is as strong-willed as any player in the NFL. He is not somebody that just sort of, you know, says one thing and then does something the next. Like he, when he speaks with purpose, and he is not someone that he's somebody that truly understands the power of his words and the platform he has. So I do not believe this comes out and that he's just sort of like, yeah, I was, never mind. All's good. Like if he says he wants out, that comes after a long, you know, buildup, as you were. And so I don't see a solution to this anytime soon that results in him playing with Green Bay. I'm not saying it's never, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the idea that a week from now, a month from now, that when OTAs open, that he's there in Green Bay playing with the Packers. I just don't see that.
Yeah, and obviously this story could change on a moment's notice. You know, by the time we talk next, Aaron Rodgers could have a new team, or he could have decided to do something entirely different. So once we get to that next step in the story, whatever that next step will be, we'll obviously dissect it from a million different angles. But it's a fascinating wrinkle that, of course, shook up the first day of the draft until around 8 o'clock, Matthew, at which point we actually got to the draft.
Before we get there, themselves. I have one last question for you on Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
For people that are doing best ball drafts right now, for people that are looking, you know, because those are going on, where are you drafting Aaron Rodgers? What level of confidence do you have in Aaron Rodgers, A, playing this year, and B, playing with a, you know, like, are if he goes to another team, let's pretend Denver, which is one of the destinations that's been rumored.
Right.
Like, is he a better fantasy asset in Denver? Is he worse? Like,
no, you know, I mean, I would say that
because it's a different situation. But on the other hand, he's Aaron Rodgers. Who cares? Like,
right. Where I would say it's Aaron Rodgers. Who cares? There's not very much room for him to go up. And I don't think there are too many places where he could go down either. Right. Because he's the rising tide that floats the rest of the boats. And I know that Denver has better wide receivers than Green Bay, but the offensive line in Green Bay has been a major strength, a great running game. Rodgers has been a pretty darn good situation. So my thought is that, like, the range for Aaron Rodgers in preseason rankings is probably somewhere from, like, as high as, what, 3 behind Mahomes and maybe Lamar Jackson? What's the low? Yeah. 7, 8? Doesn't matter where he plays. It's not going to fall too much lower than that.
Yeah, I probably would have him somewhere in the 5 to 10 range, probably like.
All right, I'm saying the highest he would go would be 3, and the lowest he'd go would be like maybe 10.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, just on a personal preference, I think I'd prefer obviously you'd prefer him. I think I'd prefer Josh Allen. I think I'd actually prefer Dak Prescott to him at this point. You know, certainly he's in that range. I agree with you. I prefer Aaron Rodgers to Deshaun Watson if I'm drafting today, you know, in terms of guys that normally go in the top 10. So it becomes interesting. I prefer Kyler Murray to Aaron Rodgers just as I'm going through, you know, guys in, you know, off the top of my head. But it's certainly something to keep in mind. And anyway, much more to this story. I'm sure we will talk about this throughout the summer.
Let's get to the draft picks now. And of course, we start with the draft pick that we've known was going to be number one overall. That's Trevor Lawrence going to the Jaguars. We've known this basically that he would go number one overall since the moment he entered Clemson, which was 3 years ago. Just a matter of who was going to have the first overall pick. So I think it's important to note as we get going here that we're not going to do a deep dive on every single player's value because, as we know, not every rookie has immediate fantasy value, but we'll run through them, Matthew. Trevor Lawrence lands in Jacksonville. Absolutely no surprise there. A prodigious, transcendent talent. This was one of the best days in Jacksonville Jaguars franchise history.
We talked about this on the digital show that you and I did. 17 rushing touchdowns for Lawrence over the last two seasons. And I think that's important because that's what's going to key his fantasy value, at least immediately, is how much rushing will he do in Jacksonville? You and I both think, and you even more so than I, that it's going to be more than people sort of give him credit for, right? Like, we're not saying he's going to be Kyler Murray or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, but we do think, you know, again, Aaron Rodgers had 7 rushing touchdowns last year, you know, like anything that you can add with your legs, you can, you know, if you can get 250, 300, 350 yards rushing and whatever, 5 rushing touchdowns, that makes a big difference. It's going to be a bad team. He's going to throw a lot. I think he's a QB2, but I think he's the, you can make an argument for Trey Lance, but I would say Trevor Lawrence is the number one pick in a super flex dynasty rookie startup draft. Shark, Marvin Jones, LaVisca, and then adding Travis Etienne. We'll talk about him in a second, but nice pass catching running back out of the backfield. We can discuss whether it was a smart draft pick by the Jaguars, but there's actually some weapons there for a prospect that most people say is the most complete quarterback prospect to come out of college since Andrew Luck.
No need to overthink this one. And you said we can have a conversation about whether it was a smart draft pick by Jacksonville. No, we can't. It was a smart draft pick by Jacksonville, no matter what way you slice it. I think that we will be focused so much on Trevor's throwing ability because it is rare. Fantastic athlete. During his college career at Clemson, they did a ton of read options and quarterback power runs near the goal line. Whether Jacksonville does it as much or not remains to be seen. And you'd imagine that the stakes are a little bit higher here, right? You're protecting him for 10 or 15 years in Jacksonville. So you may not see quite as many designed quarterback runs near the goal line, but he's a phenomenal runner. Everybody remembers that run against Ohio State in the college football playoff 2 seasons ago. So all the boxes are checked for Trevor Lawrence. To me, the clear-cut number one quarterback in any metric amongst these rookies, dynasty, redraft, you name it, the guy is an absolute star. Number two,
hey,
overall,
just to be clear, Hayfield, when I'm saying you can question whether the draft pick was smart, I was talking about Travis Etienne, whether Jaguars should have taken Trevor Lawrence, of course, is a no-brainer. I was just whether a team that had so many needs and had such production out of James Robinson last year should have used a first-round draft pick on a running back. No, even though we all love Etienne as a talent, just given where Jacksonville was need-wise, and what they have on their roster, was that a smart draft pick for the Jags? That was my point.
We'll get there in just a moment, and I have some thoughts. That much is for sure. Zach Wilson was the second pick out of BYU. He goes to the Jets, and a guy who, Stefania, this was sort of the story of 2 careers for him in college. And oddly enough, he was one of those rare players who got better after he hurt his thumb. The guy gets hurt in his second to last season in college, comes back after a thumb issue and took off and vaulted himself all the way to the number 2 overall pick.
Yeah. And I actually, a friend of mine is a physical therapist, has been working with Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson in preparation for the draft, both on a, what you call a proactive rehab standpoint. In Zach Wilson's case, there was some talk out there about whether he had a shoulder issue, and that was not an issue at all. So if there are people out there still wondering that, there really was an injury there, but he's been focusing on getting a lot stronger, developing his core work, and looks fantastic, I am told. So Zach Wilson, no injury concerns. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence, we didn't even really mention it, but he had surgery on his non-throwing shoulder in the offseason. He's back to throwing fully, and he's 100%. But yes, the thing about Zach Wilson that strikes me is he just looks like he still has growth to do. You forget how young these guys are when they get drafted in the NFL. And from a standpoint of physical development, they haven't reached their max physical development. He will get bigger and he will get more solid. When you see him in his suit, he looks slim. He looks like, it's a little worrisome when you think about the big boys that he's about to face. But what the Jets did that Sam Darnold never had was they got protection for Zach Wilson. So I think that's just as important as the draft pick.
Yeah, Zach Wilson, somewhere around the 210-pound range, definitely one of the slighter quarterbacks that was taken amongst the top 5. Excellent athlete as well, by the way, is Zach Wilson. But he's going to make his bones in the NFL as a distance thrower. The guy was so electric in the pocket, but he was just launching rockets down the field as well to a good group of wide receivers at BYU. Let's go to the number 3 quarterback taken, and we'll go back to you, Stefania, because of course it's your team, Trey Lance. After all the suspense and all the waiting and all the suggestions and all the projections, Trey Lance goes to the 49ers. What was your level of excitement Did you hope this was the outcome? What were your thoughts on this pick?
Well, I think you guys know. I mean, we talked about it on the podcast. You asked me who I wanted versus who I thought they would draft. And you remember my answer was, I want Trey Lance. And so, yes, I yelled when it happened, because I think we were all, you know, if you followed the money in Vegas, then that was the giveaway that Trey Lance was likely to be the guy. And Jed York, also his Twitter account, giving away field. You cracked the code of Jed York's Twitter account about the miles he was looking to run before they made their pick. If anyone wonders, go back and look at Fields' feed on that. But there were some hints that he would end up being the guy. And I just felt like the qualities that Trey Lance had all around would make him a really good match with Shanahan. Like, he would be so desirable for Shanahan, who's got a chance to develop a quarterback from ground zero. And the growth potential for Trey Lance is huge. I love the fact that he's as young as he is. He's smart. And actually, there's some really good information in Peter King's column this morning about what Kyle Shanahan said about Trey Lance. And he said he plays on tape like a guy who's got far more experience, more seasoned than what he is. So I think he gives them, again, potential is the word that comes to mind. And I also think that if you listen to Shanahan and Lance, I know, Matthew, you've been denying this the entire time. You're like, Jimmy Garoppolo is gone. I actually think this makes more the case, at least for right now, as to why Jimmy Garoppolo remains around. And I don't necessarily think that they're going to get rid of him unless something was to fall from the sky that would be a perfect option for them. But right now, I think that he stays put.
I hate to do this. I think Stefania's right. I hate to admit it. You are absolutely right. I backtrack on everything I said because I thought they were, if they took Mac Jones or Justin Fields, okay then, but Trey Lance obviously is a really exciting prospect, but because of the lack of experience that he had at North Dakota State, he's going to take a little bit more seasoning. And knowing you know, that the challenge is, you know, the brilliance of Shanahan's offensive scheme, but it does take a while to learn. I agree with you, Stefania. I do think that barring something that, you know, whether it's a crazy trade or an injury, that I think the first snap under center of the first game of the 49ers is taken by Jimmy Garoppolo. And that Trey Lance is a big part of their future. But I actually agree with you. I think there's a much better chance after they drafted Trey Lance that Jimmy G sticks around than there would have been had they drafted Mac Jones or Justin Fields.
Yeah, and Trey Lance in Dynasty is so interesting. I mean, athletically, just don't find too many quarterbacks like him, except for the one we'll talk about in just a moment, and Justin Fields. But Trey Lance, for those less familiar, which by this point I'm sure you are, but just a remarkable 2019 season at North Dakota State, 28 touchdowns. Zero interceptions. Think about that. 28 touchdowns, zero picks. He had 13 rushing scores. Go back if you ever want to go have some fun and kill 13 minutes. Just go watch his highlights on YouTube and find the James Madison game in the 2019 season. I'm going to send you the play I'm thinking of, Stefania, because he basically carried the entire James Madison defense for like a 15-yard gain. And I'm just envisioning what that looks like on a designed run with Kyle Shanahan at the next level. The next quarterback that was taken was Justin Fields, as we saw a big trade-up. We'll get to him in just a little bit. But the fourth player, period, off the board was Kyle Pitts to the Atlanta Falcons. Matthew, we have been hoping and waiting and wishing for a new tight end to help us sort of, I guess, deepen out the roster, because there are so few good tight ends that you can actually count on. And we may have our next George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Rob Gronkowski on our hands.
I don't think may. I mean, you know, I mean, like, you know, we talk about Trevor Lawrence as, you know, just the most complete quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. Kyle Pitts is the most complete tight end prospect since Tony Gonzalez. Like, I don't know. Right. I mean, like,
yeah, I would say they're regarded basically like since Vernon Davis would be what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. And so, right. And now he goes to obviously a very good quarterback in Matt Ryan and an offense with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. And all of a sudden you're like, who am I guarding here? And so he's going to be one of the hardest players to rank because it's a great landing spot for him. We know about the talent, but he also is a rookie tight end. And literally the only, I think in the past decade, Kyle, you can keep me honest here, but I believe at least in the past decade, it might be 15 years, the only tight end rookie that finished in the top 10 of the position was Evan Engram in his rookie year. And that was the year that everyone on the Giants got hurt. And it was just a fluke because it was all this junk time. They were awful that year and he had no one else to throw to. So it was just all Evan Engram. But Kyle Pitts is going to, somebody is going to reach for him. Like, I can't imagine there are six or seven tight ends that get drafted in your league. And Kyle Pitts isn't one of them. So if you want him this year, you're going to have to draft him early. And he's a top five pick in Dynasty. You know, and so it's a great landing spot. And Matt Ryan is suddenly, it's weird to call Matt Ryan a sleeper field, but I think Matt Ryan's a sleeper.
Yeah,
if,
totally,
you know, we'll see if Julio gets traded or not, but if Julio's still there and Ridley and Pitts and a running game that's sort of like, you know, with a defense that's still a work in progress, Matt Ryan becomes pretty interesting.
The stars have aligned for Matt Ryan in terms of the piece around him, and I know that he's almost always had really good wide receiver, but this is the best group of pass catchers I think he has or ever will have. And you mentioned dynasty value, Matthew. I think there's a case for Kyle Pitts actually as the most valuable player in dynasty in this year's rookie class, just because as great as Trevor Lawrence is, as an example, it's possible that Trevor Lawrence, I'm not saying this is likely, but he could be the third best quarterback in this class, or he could be the best, but just a little bit better than Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones or Zach Wilson, right? It just, who's the next best rookie tight end? And the answer is it's not very obvious, right? The gap between Kyle Pitts and the next best rookie tight end could be so, so significant. Let's get to the fifth pick in the draft as yet another pass catcher went off the board. It's Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals, Matthew. Reunion, which was the theme of the first round between Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. I know the Bengals don't strike you as a team that absolutely needed a wide receiver, but that more speaks to just how special Ja'Marr Chase is.
Yeah, and Burrow was campaigning for him to be drafted. There were a lot of targets there. Remember when Joe Burrow went down, he led the NFL in pass attempts. This was an offense that throws. AJ Green now in Arizona. So there's a lot of targets that have been left sort of on the table, if you will, for Ja'Marr Chase. And I personally would have liked to see them get Sewell. Like, I thought they could have gotten wide receiver value in the second round and, you know, really try to bolster that line. But the Bengals went another way. They went with Ja'Marr Chase. And it's interesting. You argued for Kyle Pitts. I think if I was in a dynasty league that wasn't super flex, i.e. that wasn't a two quarterback league, and I had the number one pick, as special as Kyle Pitts is, assuming it was not premium tight end premium scoring, which is a point and a half for tight ends, I think Ja'Marr Chase would be my number one pick. Cause I just a special, special guy who now gets his college quarterback back. Obviously they had a great connection in 2019. There's a reason why the Bengals picked him where they did. He's going to be a big part of what we expect to be a pretty good offense there in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, ridiculous season in 2019 for Ja'Marr Chase. Remember how great Justin Jefferson was as a rookie this past year? He was the Robin to Ja'Marr Chase's Batman in the 2019 season. Ja'Marr Chase rewrote basically every record book in the SEC. And then Devontae Smith rewrote them a year later. But the point is, Ja'Marr Chase was that dude back two seasons ago. We're going to talk about another wide receiver coming off the board in just a second.
20 touchdowns.
Yeah, 20 touchdowns.
I mean, 20 touchdowns, over 1,700 yards and 20 touchdowns in a college season.
Yeah, stupid. It's ridiculous. He was absurd during that season. And we're coming back to talk about a certain Alabama wide receiver, perhaps not the one that you think. But first, a word from our friends at Geico. Hey, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. Actually, I know it can. But you know what makes it easy? Or you know what is easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com. That's geico.com. All right, we're back and we're talking about the first of two Alabama wide receivers to go in a span of, what, five picks. It's Jalen Waddle, who goes sixth overall to the Miami Dolphins. Many thought Devontae Smith would be the first Alabama wide receiver off the board. I personally was not surprised, Matthew. This guy is shot out of a cannon on every single play of his career.
You know, Tyreek Hill is the comp that you hear a lot for Jalen Waddle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so really fast, but also somebody that can play near the line of scrimmage, that you can do sweeps and bubble screens and, you know, and quick slants with, and just, you know, let him use that speed to outrun everyone. You think about Miami, And they added Will Fuller this offseason. They re-signed Devontae Parker. They've got Mike Gesicki. And they added another tight end. We can talk about him maybe later. But if Tua fails, it's not because he didn't have weapons. The Miami Dolphins are doing everything possible to say, like, hey, we are going to surround you with talent. The issue, however, is that fantasy-wise, that makes me concerned for Jalen Waddle. I'm not talking dynasty here, but, you know, look, Tua last year struggled with a deep ball, didn't really go, really wasn't that vertical. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why Waddle makes sense here. But a lot of mouths to feed in an offense that I think is going to be probably more conservative than it was when Ryan Fitzpatrick was under center. So really nice pick for Miami, really nice pick for Tua. I don't know in terms of redraft fantasy value that there's a ton there, at least immediately.
Yeah, and just a couple of notes on Jalen Waddle, most explosive player in the draft, which is why, as Matthew mentioned, there were some shades of Tyreek Hill as a player, not as rocked up as Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is a thick, strong dude. Jalen Waddle is, you know, slight, but he is fast as heck. I love this stat. It's my favorite from the draft is that he had 17 touchdown catches, did Jalen Waddle in college. The average length of those 17 touchdown catches, 44.5 yards. It's not like he had one or two. He had 17, and they averaged over 40 yards per catch. Next up, Stefania, off the board was his friend and teammate and record-setting wideout, Devontae Smith. Did you want to get in on Waddle with the ankle?
Yeah, I did, because I think, you know, everybody's been so highlight happy on Waddle, you kind of forget that he didn't play much last year. I mean, he had a season that ended early because of a devastating ankle injury. And I don't know that we always pay attention to if this injury had happened in the NFL, we would have been talking about, is he going to be the same when he comes back? He had a fractured dislocation of his ankle. He had, it was a mess. Torn ligaments, broken bones, dislocation, and just a horrific injury. And actually, the comp to that is Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake, coming out of Alabama, ended up at the Miami Dolphins. And Kenyon Drake had an injury that people thought he might never play again. And Jalen Waddle, his injury looked very, very similar to Kenyon Drake. So the good news is we have seen somebody come back and play in the NFL from this. The other good news, you did see him make an entry into the national championship, although he was still struggling. He wasn't back 100%. But I will tell you that reports out of the combine were that he looked fantastic. And I am told that he is 100% healed. Everything looks really good from this injury. So I just wanted to reinforce that, because people who might be wondering or who saw that injury happen, it was terrible. The good news is that he's well on his way, and I don't think there'll be any issues for him coming in. As far as Devontae Smith, I originally was one of the ones who thought he might end up in Miami, but here he is with the Eagles. And I actually think this is a good fit for him. I mean, it's interesting because you've got these two incredible receivers from Alabama, but if you watch them run, their styles are so incredibly different, you know, and part of it's their build. Part of it is the way they run, but Devontae Smith glides. Like, to me, it's like a beautiful running style. And I think on the perimeter, he's going to be amazing for the Eagles. And he gets reunited too, right?
That's right. He is reunited with Jalen Hurts, of course.
A lot of these college reunions of quarterback receiver that we're talking about, Burrow with Chase, you know, Waddle with Tua, and Devontae Smith with Jalen Hurts. There's something to that chemistry and that relationship that helps build when they go to the NFL.
Well, the two of them were quick to meet up again in Philadelphia, attending the Sixers game after meeting up at the team facility. Devontae Smith, such a unique and special player. With Philly, we know they need to hit on an evaluation of the wide receiver spot. Rare speed, rare acceleration for Devontae Smith. I hope the Eagles use him all sorts of unique, creative ways under new head coach Nick Sirianni and offensive coordinator Shane Steichen. Let's get to the next quarterback. And I think this was the most interesting pick in the first round, as the Bears moved up 20 to 11. That was where the Giants originally were slated to pick. They grabbed Justin Fields, Matthew, and the Bears needed a home run to breathe some life into their season. It's a make or break season for Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, and they may have hit a grand slam here.
Look, it was a move that they absolutely had to make. You know, as we talked about somewhat on the digital show, like, look, if you're Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, you're on the hot seat. And one of two things happens. Either, you know, they gave up a lot to get Justin Fields, but they had to. And If Justin Fields works out, no one's going to care what they gave up. No one will. And if Justin Fields doesn't work out, they're fired, and the next regime can worry about the fact that they traded all those picks away. I also ultimately, I thought this was a nice landing spot for Fields. It was a great move for them to go up and get him. And let's be honest, I would argue that before he's even thrown a pass in the NFL, Justin Fields is the best quarterback Allen Robinson's ever played with. I think there is a chance, Field, that Justin Fields winds, there's a legit chance that Justin Fields winds up as the number one quarterback in fantasy among the rookies because of his rushing and because in Chicago they like to throw. This is a team that was top eight in the NFL in pass attempts last year. And we know that, you know, Fields adds so much with his legs. And Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, they got some nice pass-catching running backs, obviously, in Montgomery, Tariq Cohen. They added Damian Williams in the offseason. Like, there's some actual weapons there for Fields, and my suspicion is he starts game one.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are saying what you expect them to say, by the way, which is like, yeah, he's going to have to earn it, and Andy's still our guy. That's just reverence and respect for a veteran and just being kind to Andy Dalton, who you gave $10 million this offseason. Justin Fields will be the starter sooner rather than later. To me, such an electric player, so exciting, so accurate with the football. There's a ton of pressure on the Bears and by osmosis, ton of pressure on Justin Fields. But I'm so happy for him that he figured out or got a landing spot that was not too far down the board. Number 11 overall, the Bears make a huge move. And this could be the kind of move that saves the Bears leadership and maybe, again, earns them a contract extension. That much is clear with the stakes that were put into this pick by trading a first-round pick in 2022, amongst others. Next one off the board amongst quarterbacks and skill players is Mac Jones. Patriots quarterback now as he went 15th overall, the fifth quarterback off the board. The Patriots, as we know, have Cam Newton back for one more season at least, but quarterback was a need for them. And Mac Jones, the most accurate quarterback almost ever in college football this past year, had an absolutely absurd season, 4,500 passing yards, Matthew. But how soon do you think he could be the starter in New England?
Honestly, I think there's a chance that he could be the starter game one. I don't know how great a chance that is, but it just, look, I never want to put anything past Belichick or Josh McDaniels. Like, they'll make it work. There's, you know, obviously Belichick's, you know, the GOAT. But I think about what Mac Jones is. Mac Jones is like, you know, a big stand-up pocket passer. Cam Newton is obviously a guy where you want to do a lot of RPOs, where you want to use the athletic ability and his rushing. And it's just, it's a completely different offense with Cam Newton. And highlighting what Cam Newton does well, than it would be if you built an offense around Mac Jones. And it feels weird that like I'm just trying to think of like how that camp goes. Like, is Mac Jones suddenly running the same plays that Cam Newton is? Are you installing a different offense for the second team versus the first team? Like, it's an interesting one. I don't know the contract situation with Cam Newton, but isn't there a chance that the Patriots could get out of this deal with Cam?
Yeah, I mean, they could get out right now, and if they cut Cam, they would still owe him. They paid him a $2 million signing bonus, so they would owe him that. And then he's got $1.5 million guaranteed in his base salary. But if they cut him and he signs with somebody else, and let's say it's for $1 million, then the Patriots get $1 million credit at the end of this year. So put it this way, the money involved for Cam is not prohibitive enough that they are bound to stand by him for the rest of the year, right? We'll see. So I think you're right, Matthew. All the points you made are notable. I mean, they are so different stylistically. That being said, you know, Mac Jones, such a great gifted thrower of the ball, and the Patriots had a decent amount of success with a quarterback who, I don't want to make the Mac Jones-Tom Brady comparison in many ways other than the fact that Tom Brady won with accuracy in his mind and his ability to navigate the pocket, not navigate outside of the pocket. So I think the Patriots system will be relatively easy to implement for them. Once again, with Mac Jones, it's just going to be the balance of reps. That's what I think is most interesting. And
right,
I don't know when Mac Jones should be expected to take over as the starter, whether it's right away or whether it's the middle of the season, but not a player that I think anybody is going into this year with redraft fantasy value. Let's rip through these players that were taken 20 and beyond. We've got, I think, sort of three or four, maybe five guys that were kind of interesting, maybe have more fantasy value than the quarterbacks right away, Matthew. And let's start with Kadarius Toney, the Giants' new wide receiver, drafted 20th overall out of Florida. What do you make of this pick?
Didn't love it for the Giants in terms of where it was. And fantasy wise, I just don't think it matters in the sense, like, he's a gadget guy. He's, you know, Percy Harvin is a comp that I've heard a lot for Kadarius Toney, like really electric player who can do a lot of different things. Swiss Army knife type guy, but they got Kenny Golladay that just signed to a $70 million deal, right? They have Sterling Shepard, they have Darius Slayton, they have Evan Engram, Kyle Rudolph, and of course, Saquon Barkley. Now, a lot of those guys have struggled with injuries, so I get it, wanting to have some depth here. But in terms of redraft leagues, there are other wide receivers that I would prefer. I can't imagine in a standard ESPN 10-team league, you're drafting Kadarius Toney. He's a guy that you might be picking up as a free agent at some point if there's some injuries that create a role for him.
I think this is one of the more discussed picks in this year's draft. People haven't had sort of middling ground opinions. It's been mostly really strong one way or the other. Kadarius Toney, maybe the most electric player with the football in his hands in the draft, other than Jalen Waddle. The guy is a human joystick. You should just see his footwork. It's absurd. Came on so strong during his final season at Florida. This was his breakout year this past year. But I think what people are concerned about, to Matthew's point, is not just the weapons around him, but also just like the role and the fit with a quarterback whose accuracy needs to improve as well. Because where Kadarius Toney is going to be awesome is throws at or near the line of scrimmage, where he has run after catch opportunities. Well, the Giants kind of have a handful of those guys, or a couple of those guys, and Sterling Shepard and obviously Saquon Barkley as well. But I love the process involved for the Giants to get that extra first round pick next year. So I think his athletic ability is so unique that I'm not ruling anything out yet for Kadarius Toney, but I think there are other wide receivers that clearly have more redraft value right away. But I think there's a chance, Matthew. I think there's a chance that the next player we talk about has as much redraft value as any rookie, and maybe it's not close going into the season. Najee Harris goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the people who that was like one of those popular mock draft picks going into the process, right? The Steelers were locked in on Najee Harris. They drafted Najee Harris. They did not have a starting running back that you felt great about going into the draft. Is he this year's, I don't know, you name it, whoever the most, you know, whether Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year or Josh Jacobs the year before, like the rookie that's going to be drafted as if he's going to have a massive immediate fantasy impact?
Yes, and I think because he will. Look, there are questions about the offensive line and the ability of the Steelers to run the ball effectively, which I think those questions are fair. But I think volume for Najee Harris will mask the inefficiency of that offensive line. He's just going to get a massive workload, a true three down back on what should still be a pretty good offense. Is Ben the same guy that he was a few years ago? No, he's not, but he can still throw it. And when you think about the wide receivers, you know, in Deontay Johnson and Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool and James Washington, like they've got some real vertical threats. Like he's going to see, you know, a lot of light boxes, Najee Harris is. And so because of the threat of the passing game that the Steelers have, and just in terms of incredible volume, like we've seen, whether it was, you know, everyone from Le'Veon Bell to James Conner, when they've committed to a running back, that running back and that running back stayed healthy, the running back has had significant fantasy value. So Harris, lead back on a good offense with massive volume. You're not worried about Jalen Samuels or Anthony McFarlane or Benny Snell or Kalen Ballage. Like, they used a first-round pick on Harris. To me, he's a top 15 pick overall and, an easy top 15. He's a top 20 pick overall and a top 15 fantasy running back.
Yeah, really easy. Good in the passing game, obviously a gifted runner. The question mark for me with Pittsburgh is just going to be whether the offensive line woes are enough to undo Najee Harris. My guess is, though, that he has a reasonably high floor. The Steelers made no bones about their plans with Najee Harris shortly after drafting him. I expect them to drive him into the ground like a running back, like they did with Le'Veon Bell. I don't mean that as in a negative way. I don't mean that as like the Pittsburgh Steelers are engaging in malpractice, meaning like when you draft a player this high that's that gifted and plays that position, you need to get the most out of him. Right after Najee Harris was Travis Etienne.
I just want to jump in on Najee Harris because
what do you guys,
a lot of people were asking me questions, social media, Najee Harris with the ankle. There were some concerns about that. What I would say is, again, you know, he's out of Alabama and his ankle is fine. No structural issues at all with his ankle. I will also tell you that Pittsburgh Steelers have one of the hardest grading medical groups in the league. And so if there were any concerns on the medical front, that team would not have been the one to take him. So I think that if for people who might've been concerned, like, is this going to be a problem? No.
Okay, that's good to know right there. Obviously, Najee Harris toughed it out this past season and did not look too much worse for the wear when he was actually on the field. Let's go next to Travis Etienne, who this was the one, Matthew, that's been discussed a ton. So go ahead with your thoughts on the Jaguars drafting Etienne 25th overall with other players and other needs available on the board.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of analytics that suggest that running back is the most replaceable of all the positions on the football field. And again, if you think about what the Jaguars have, which is a lot of needs, you know, it was the worst roster in the NFL last year. There's a reason they were picking first overall for a reason. One bright spot of the Jaguar season last year was James Robinson, the undrafted free agent rookie who was the fifth best running back in fantasy last year, over 1,000 yards for a bad team, you know, and proved he belonged in the NFL in a significant way. And so Travis Etienne, as talented as we all think he is, felt like a luxury for Jacksonville there when they had so many needs and there were so many, you know, very talented players available. All that said, they drafted him. He's now in Jacksonville. So what do we do with him? I do not buy the argument, the discussion from Urban Meyer, who said, oh, we're going to use Etienne on third down and James Robinson, Carlos Hyde are going to be, you know, our lead guys. No, Travis Etienne is going to be the starting running back of the Jaguars. You know, I think he's doing that out of respect to some veterans and what Robinson did last year. You know, Robinson and Hyde won't go away. They'll have a role which limits Etienne's upside, but Etienne's the most talented back of those three. Obviously played college ball with Trevor Lawrence. And so, you know, I think he's going to be a high upside flex, low end RB2 with, you know, significant upside, especially in PPR leagues, because the kid is a special player. It was a weird landing spot for him.
Yeah, I agree. It was a weird landing spot, especially given the timing. Urban Meyer also mentioned that Kadarius Toney was a player they were going to pick that would have broke his heart to see Kadarius Toney go five picks before Travis Etienne, but Toney would have been such a fun fit in that offense. Even though they have a kind of underrated receiving group, Etienne scored in more games than any other player in NCAA history. He found the end zone so explosive. I just wonder if that running back room is too much or too crowded right now for any of our liking and preference. Spanya, the Ravens needed to address the wide receiver spot. They finally did in Rashad Bateman. And this has to be good news for Lamar Jackson, but also putting some players on notice because the Ravens, they've now drafted two wide receivers or more in four straight drafts.
Yeah, it feels like they just can't get consistency at the position. And part of that has been injury struggles. I mean, I remember when we were talking about Hollywood Brown, that was such an exciting player. We thought this was going to be an answer to their perimeter deep threat concerns. And he certainly played maybe a little bit better than we thought in his first year coming off major foot surgery when he was drafted, but they still haven't, I feel like every week we're like meh in fantasy about plugging in a Ravens wide receiver. Rashad Bateman, obviously, he's Hollywood Brown's a small guy. This is a bigger receiver, a little bit more physical. I think that he presents, you know, a nice option for Lamar Jackson, but I also really like their Tylan Wallace pick later. So I think this is one of those I want to see what happens in training camp and see how things start to shake out before I get comfortable with who's going to be the Ravens wide receiver in fantasy that I'm going to trust the most.
And we'll see if we can trust any of them. And yeah, to your point, Tylan Wallace at Oklahoma State, fourth round pick, we'll discuss in our follow-up pod with some of the day two and day three picks. Bateman was a guy who maybe was a little bit hampered by the fact that he didn't run didn't play as fast as you saw guys like Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and Jamar Chase, but man, did he get open. He averaged over 20 yards per catch. He just got open. He just consistently made plays for Minnesota. I really like the player, and the Ravens obviously drilling into a very, very important need. Matthew, any closing thoughts here on either Bateman himself or the first round rookies that maybe have some fantasy value or lack thereof?
Yeah, specifically to Bateman, I think Bateman is a pick that helps Lamar Jackson more than it helps Bateman or the Ravens. You know, to Stefania's point, like, I mean, again, they signed Sammy Watkins, they've got Hollywood Brown, Mark Andrews, and it's still going to be a run first offense. It's still going to be, you know, an offense that's predicated on Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards running the ball. And they'll, you know, maybe they open it up a little bit more, but I don't think they open it up enough so that there's a significant enough target share for Bateman to be you know, like easily could have a couple of big games. But to me, this is more about helping Lamar Jackson than it is about Rashad Bateman's redraft value this year. And in terms of the first round, I thought it was a great draft and really fun, and that there's a lot of fantasy relevant names here, but I think it's mostly the wide receivers and potentially a couple of the quarterbacks, depending on how deep your league is as Superflex becomes more and more popular. You know, only two first round running backs. We get more running. This has been one of the weaker running back classes just overall. So, you know, I think there are some, there's not that many running backs that are going to be fantasy relevant right out of the gate. You know, there's like probably about five.
Yep, agreed on that. And what we're going to do is we're going to follow up this podcast with a little briefer podcast on some of the guys that went in the second and third days of the draft, running backs, wide receivers, and a tight end who might have some fantasy relevance, be it in redraft or dynasty leagues. But that's all that we have for this week. Before we say goodbye, one more happy birthday to the great Matt Harrington, and for Stefania and Matthew, I am Field. Anything to plug before we say goodbye?
You know what? Yeah, RotoPass is now back open, baby. RotoPass.com, which gets you a 12-month subscription to ESPN Plus and a number of other great sites that we're partners with. But, you know, if you remember ESPN Plus, now you get Field Yates' waiver wire column. You get all of Stefania's stuff. You get my love-hate column. Plus, of course, all of Mike Clay's stuff. The fantasy show on ESPN Plus with myself and Daniel and all sorts of other great content as well. So RotoPass is a great deal. And if use the promo code 06010, you can you get 10% off. So RotoPass.com, go check it out.
Stefania, you got anything?
No, not right now. Stay tuned. Okay.
Nothing to plug. Stay tuned for all that. We will be back sometime soon with plenty more fantasy content. As you know, when the draft is over, the work is just getting started. For Matthew and Field and Matt Harrington. Actually, I just cussed it myself. For Matthew and Stefania and Matt Harrington, I'm Field. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace out. See you in the 06010.